Penguin Random House Audio presents The Best Minds, a story of friendship, madness, and the tragedy of good intentions. This is the author, Jonathan Rosen. In memory of Robert and Norma Rosen, may their memory be a blessing, Zichronam Livracha, and for Anna Rosen, sister, savior, friend. I call to the mysterious one who yet shall walk the wet sands by the edge of the stream and look most like me, being indeed my double, and prove of all imaginable things the most unlike, being my anti-self. William Butler Yeats, Ego Dominus Tuus. Part 1. The House on Mirland Road. It is an illusion that we were ever alive, lived in the houses of mothers, arranged ourselves by our own motions in a freedom of air. Wallace Stevens, The Rock. I am going back 50 years, before the lurid headlines, the Hollywood deal, the publishing contract, and the New York Times profile of the role model genius who finished Yale Law School against all odds. Before delusions mistaken for stories and stories mistaken for life. Before the fancy clothes you bought for management consulting and wore into the hospital, the halfway house, and the Gatsby house you guarded with a baseball bat against enemies disguised as friends and family, guarded in turn by beloved neighbors. I am going back to the time before you graduated from Yale summa cum laude, which I always thought of as summa cum laude since you achieved in 3 years what I failed to accomplish in 4. Before high school, where you ran while I was beaten, and the horror 20 years later when it was my turn to run. I am on a road racing backward out of a tragic sorrow whose circles radiate in all directions. Forgive me. I know there is no road and it isn't racing backward. Or forward. I know there is no going back. But here I am on a short street in New Rochelle. There is a green and white colonial house at the top of the hill and a brown and white Tudor house at the bottom. There are 2 10-year-old boys who live in those houses, even now. They're just illusions, but they're also real, and they're where I've got to start. Chapter 1. The Suitable Playmate. When you were a small boy, the aim of the suitable playmate could not have been more perfectly fulfilled. Across the street was Michael Lauder, the ideal friend, a brilliant peer. Cynthia Ozick, Letter to the Author. My family moved to New Rochelle in 1973. There were good schools, green lawns, and quaint signs painted in the 1920s, bearing legends like, "Only 45 minutes from Broadway," and "City of Homes, Churches, and Schools," though there were 4 synagogues and Metro North got you to Manhattan, the rock around which all life revolved, in 33 minutes. But the real reason we moved to New Rochelle was so that I could meet Michael. That, at least, is what my mother's best friend, the writer Cynthia Ozick, told me. I heard much of Michael Lauder when you were growing up, and in a way, even before you knew of his existence, in this sense, that Michael, or someone like him, was always the goal in choosing where to buy a house. Michael, in other words, was inevitable. I was destined to meet him, or at least someone like him, because friendship cannot actually be foretold, any more than madness or the day of your death, can it? I met Michael soon after we moved in, as I was examining a heap of junk that the previous owners had left in a neat pile at the edge of our lawn. I was looking for relics of the 3 athletic boys who had lived there, and wondering if a small aquarium was worth salvaging, when a boy with shaggy red-brown hair and large tinted aviator glasses walked over to welcome me to the neighborhood. He was taller even than I was, gawky but with a lilting stride that was oddly purposeful for a kid our age, as if he actually had some place to go. His habit of launching himself up and forward with every step, gathering height in order to achieve distance, was so distinctive that it earned him the nickname Toes. I didn't learn he was called Toes until 5th grade started, when I learned he was also called Big. The shortest kid in class was called Small, and when they lined us up in height order, Big and Small were bookends. Sensitive teachers sometimes let the short kids go first, which I'm sure did wonders for their self-esteem. Big is less imaginative than Toes, but how many kids get two nicknames? And Michael was big. Not big like Hal, who appeared to be attending fifth grade on the GI Bill, but through some subtle combination of height, intelligence, posture, and willpower. In Brookline, the Boston suburb where my family had lived for 3 years before moving to New Rochelle, I'd been taller than all my friends, but nobody would have called me big. I settled too easily at the bottom of myself in a shy sediment. Michael was only an inch or two taller than me, and just as skinny, but he seemed to enjoy taking up space, however awkwardly he filled it. Even standing still, he had a habit of rocking forward and rising up on the balls of his feet, trying to meet his growth spurt halfway. He stood beside me on Mirland Road in that unsteady but self-assured posture, rising and falling like a wave. He was socially effective the same way he was good at basketball, through uncowed persistence. I often heard in later years that people found him intimidating, but for me it was the opposite. Despite my shyness, or because of it, Michael's self-confidence put me at ease. Perhaps because I was conscious of the awkwardness that he overcame, or simply refused to recognize, I fed off his belief in himself. Besides, being shy is not the same as being modest. The same expectation shaping his life was shaping mine. The belief that your brain is your rocket ship, and that simply as a matter of course you are going to climb inside and blast off. Propelled by some mysterious process, never specified, almost mystical, and yet entirely real, we would outsoar the shadow of ordinary existence and think our way into stratospheric success. Michael told me his name and my name, too, which he shortened to John. He liked to give the answer before the question, and offered his opinion that if the former owners had thrown out the fish tank, it probably leaked, even if it didn't look cracked. I've never liked having my name abbreviated, but I didn't correct him. It's possible his mother had sent him. Ruth Lauder was a neighborly woman who came over herself at some point to welcome us, and sometimes came over to escape the roar of her own household. But Michael's geniality and supreme self-confidence were his own. Even then, he seemed like the ambassador of his own country. It was Michael who pointed out that while my house was first on the block, it was number 11, not number 1, something I'd never have wondered about because numbers were always unpredictable, even without the new math that had been introduced in the 60s so we could win the Cold War. I didn't know it was called new math, only that having been shown a decimal point in fourth grade, I was going to spend the rest of my life trying to figure out where to put it. Michael knew, and played me a song by Tom Lehrer called New Math, one of many songs and records we spent hours listening to in his living room. The joke of new math was that it was so simple that only a child can do it, which is to say it was a song for adults, which was part of its special pleasure. Michael never believed in the line separating children from adults, or many other lines either. The Tom Lehrer album was 10 years old but new to me, full of names and concepts Michael cheerfully glossed, the Vatican, Werner von Braun, that gave it an archaic but cutting-edge quality, like the Doc Savage mysteries he also introduced me to. Michael often seemed like someone who had lived a full span already and was just slumming it in childhood, or living backward like Benjamin Button or Merlin. My parents were amused by the speed with which he took to calling them Bob and Norma, and the unabashed way he looked them in the eye as he cursed the bombing of Cambodia, or discussed the Watergate scandal while I waited for him to finish so we could play mealborns or go outside. I knew the president was a crook, but Michael knew who Liddy Halderman and Ehrlichman were and what they had done, matters he expounded as if Deep Throat had whispered to him personally in the schoolyard just behind his house. Theodore Roosevelt Elementary School was so close, Michael told me, I could wake up 15 minutes before the bell, eat breakfast, and still get to class on time. Michael treated the schoolyard, which had outdoor basketball hoops, like an extension of his backyard. I could see the roof of the school building from the window of my mother's attic office, its ornate cupola suggesting a fancy barn or a village church. I could see Michael's roof from my own window, screened by branches. There were only 6 or 7 houses on the whole street. The Lauders, number 28, were diagonally across and down, a night's move away on a chessboard. Michael gave me a tour of the Waikigil Shopping Center, 2 blocks from my house, where there was a store called Big Top that sold toys in the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?